The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Hello there, and welcome back for another reading from Our State magazine. This one from July 2023. The theme is A Taste of Summer. Got a couple of interesting articles for you here. The first one is entitled The Chord Heard Round the World. Using music as her roadmap, one writer travels among the swamps and cypress trees of Harnett County, looking and listening for traces of the obscure 50s rock and roll legend whose powerful riff inspired generations of guitarists. Written by Rebecca Bingle. If you travel near the rivers and ponds in and around Dunn, you're bound to spot the eastern bald cypress, those ancient, slow-growing trees whose mighty, pyramid-like bases are permanently plunged in swampy water, their knees and gnarled trunks scarred by history and shaped by storms. Seen together, they appear like gatherings of goblins, like prehistoric creatures, which they sort of are. In 2019, the fifth oldest tree in the world was discovered right here in the Black River Preserve, dating back about 2,600 years to 605 BC, the era of the Babylonian Empire. I'm navigating this area by song lyrics as I head toward the hometown of Link Ray, who was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in May for his enormous influence on rock guitarists ranging from Neil Young to Jimi Hendrix. All of Link's songs are driving songs. Many are wildfire, pure feeling, and wordless. Some, like Rumble, his first hit with Link Ray and his Ray Man in 1958, the song in which he's credited with inventing the power chord, are all of those things at once. But the one I'm driving to, Black River Swamp, recorded in 1971, is a map. You have to get in your head the picture of Peak Link, that black wall of sideburns edging into his face, all dark sunglasses and leather, born part Shawnee and raised near these swamps, to fully comprehend the many dimensions that exist below the sentimental surface of lyrics like turning off the main highway, going down that country road. There's a place down in the county where the pine trees grow so tall.
Turning off the main highway, going down that country road.
I'm listening as I drive past Pine Woods, a little wooden home painted pink with red trim, a plain white house of worship named simply Black River Church, and on to cypress-studded Rhodes Pond, where Link played and sang as a child. At the moment that I hear him singing, "I was born down in the country, down where the cotton grows," I swear I'm passing fields full of harvested and wrapped spools of it, waiting to be hauled off. I'm just down the road from the Black River Swamp of the song's title. Trees are the original noise barriers, and I'm thinking about the kinds of sounds that those rare, moss-covered eastern cypresses have absorbed over time. It's maybe a strange proposition to look for traces of Link Ray in Dunn, an estate that he moved away from when he was a teenager, when he himself was the spiritual age of rumble. I happened to be in North Carolina in 1998 when he made a rare return visit to play a concert at Cat's Cradle in Chapel Hill. It was during his first tour of 30 years, a night so ephemeral and practically undocumented that it's hard to believe that it even occurred. You can see footage of him performing that year on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, resembling my memory of that night, a visitor who'd crept out of semi-obscurity from his adopted home in Denmark, still bearing an accent hyper-particular to his hometown regent and era. The man who'd revolutionized rock and roll still wore dark shades and a black T-shirt with the sleeves cut off, his shaggy, extra-long ponytail whipping behind him like a trail of Spanish moss. I came to Link's music via the 90s punk scene and college radio in Greensboro at the age when you should first encounter it, young and reckless, when whatever psychic fire that you're starting needs some extra igniting fluid. Already, I'd sublimated rumble via film, John Waters' Pink Flamingos, the diner scene in Pulp Fiction. Rumble has wordlessly suggested rebellion in everything from The Sopranos to SpongeBob SquarePants to, most recently, Poker Face. That night at the Cradle, Link played Rumble and two of his other well-known songs, Rawhide and Ace of Spades, more than once, but nobody minded. He'd earned the right. He covered Mystery Train. He was a true blue Elvis Presley fan. And Hank Williams, whose songs, he once said, just struck a nerve in my heart. There was an eerie, torch-passing feeling that night, the sensation of being in a room with a person who accidentally lit the way for so much other music that I loved, all of it rooted in that one simple, distorted electric chord. The fact that Rumble remains the only instrumental song ever to be banned from radio in the United States, some people actually believed it would inspire gang violence, only amplifies its inherent cool. In 1958, Rumble was a number 16 pop hit, 11 on the R&B charts. Within a decade, the song would become a primal inspiration for legions of titanic rock and rollers. Bob Dylan, who called it the best instrumental ever, covered the song in concert in 2005 on the night he learned that Link had died. It changed the whole direction of where rock and roll was gonna go, said Robbie Robertson of The Band in the documentary Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World. Pete Townshend of The Who channeled Link's distorted power chords into his own band's top 10 hit of 1966, I Can See for Miles. And Iggy Pop, a fellow rock and roll Hall of Famers, the Stooges, recalled being in a university student union the first time he heard the powerful opening chords of Rumble. Da, da, da. I left school emotionally at that moment. Link Ray didn't write or record Rumble in Dunn, but the song's underlying message of liberation and escape might have summed up his early feelings about where he came from. He was born Fred Lincoln Ray, Jr., on May 2, 1929, right in between his brothers and future bandmates Vernon and Doug. His father, Fred, was a pipe fitter and a World War I vet. His mother, Lillian, was part Shawnee and, according to Link, spiritual verging on mystic. He later recalled how she'd take him and his brothers to black gospel churches and to outdoor revivals known as brush meetings. Sometimes they'd wander Rhodes Pond, just south of Dunn, harmonizing to Will the Circle Be Unbroken. Link's childhood memories were a blend of mythic and the traumatic, of beauty and righteous fear. I was from the poorest part of North Carolina, Dunn, where I was not white and it was not safe, he told the writer Jimmy McDonough in 1997. Elvis was brought up poor in Tupelo, Mississippi, but he was still a poor white guy, and the whites ruled the world down south. My mother was a Shawnee down south, right? Ku Klux Klan country. When she was 11 years old, Lillian had her back broken by another girl on the way home from school. Handicapped, she withdrew from her classes. Outfitted in a back brace as an adult, she picked cotton and churned butter to sell. Link recalled growing up in a dirt floor house with no electricity. While Vernon and Doug inherited the fair-haired looks of their white, Indiana-born father, Link took after his mother's side a heritage that he was taught to suppress in order to survive. The Klan targeted both black and Native American people, particularly in tri-racial areas like some eastern North Carolina counties were at the time. In 1958, the year Rumble was released, KKK members led by a South Carolina Klansman burned crosses in the yards of local Lumbee families in nearby Robeson County. Members of the Lumbee tribe held an uprising that prompted a national outcry. But in the 1930s and early 40s, when Link was a kid, he was isolated from his culture and community, and he remembers running whenever the Klan was rumored to be near. We'd hide underneath the bed, hoping they wouldn't come for us, he said. In 1943, when Link was in his early teens, the family moved to Portsmouth, Virginia, where they lived in government housing near the shipyards. Suddenly surrounded by new people, new music, and new radio stations to tune into. The Ray brothers formed bands and tried their hand at everything from Western swing to rock and roll. In 1953, after contracting tuberculosis during his service in the Korean War, Link had a lung removed. At first, it was unclear if he'd ever be able to sing again. Then again, maybe he wouldn't even have to. Link's recollection of what transpired at a record hop in 1957 is inventor's lore on the level of electricity harnessed in a lightning storm with a kite and a metal key. God zaps rumble in my head, he once said, describing the performance in which the band of brothers from the Dunn Swamps spontaneously created the song right on stage. Doug had laid out a slow, exaggerated drum beat, laden with suspense, and Link responded with a heavy, three-chord drone on his Gibson Les Paul. Vernon picked up a mic and stuck it up to Link's amplifier, setting off a loud, rattling reverberation that made the crowd go wild. Later in the studio, Link duplicated that gritty sound by poking pencils into an amp, allegedly inspired by a traveling cigar box guitar-playing bluesman he'd met as a child. In the summer of 1958, Rumble became a hit, followed by more songs in the same gloriously distorted vein, all now classics in their own right. Rawhide, Jack the Ripper, Ain't That Lovin' You, Babe. Each featured Link's dramatic effect, heaving pauses, perhaps on account of that overtime working lung. Dick Clark played Link's records on the radio, but sometime in the 60s it all stopped. My type of music, Elvis's music, and all the early music died with President Kennedy, Link said later. By the time that the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the rest of the mid-60s British invasions bands took hold in America, Link had retreated to Maryland, gigging occasionally at a place called the Two Thieves, I was doing Creedence Clearwater Revival and Elvis songs, while the rest of the world was playing, you know, acid music. Drugs were Satan's candy, according to Link, a spiritual but not religious, coffee-addicted, vitamin-popping, switchblade-carrying, beer-drinking vegetarian. His last charting single was a beguiling cover of Bob Dylan's Girl from the North Country. Discord reigned for decades among the Ray brothers, who never earned much for their music. Vernon, who'd driven a taxi and cleaned bowling alleys for a living, moved to Tucson, where Link also lived for a while in a trailer in the desert, at one point recording a song with Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead on pedal steel. Vernon acted in episodes of Gunsmoke and had a cameo in the Martin Scorsese film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. In 1979, dying of cancer, Vernon ended his life. Doug died of a heart attack 5 years later. By then, Link had moved to Denmark, where he married his fourth wife, Olive, a student of Native American studies who became his manager. When Link died of a heart attack failure, or rather died of heart failure in 2005 at the age of 80, he was a father of 9 kids and 24 grandkids. His ashes are interred in a fittingly Gothic setting, a crypt in an 18th century Rococo church in Copenhagen. When I return to Dunn, it's going on 20 years since Link's death, and more than 60 since the release of Rumble. There's no record store in town, but there should be. You're unlikely to score any first pressings of Link's records in the secondhand shops, not even the delightfully named Saks Fifth Avenue Thrift. Except for the festivals that celebrates his music some years, you may not hear Link at all. The local AM station broadcasts gospel music, local talk shows, church supper announcements. But one morning a caller with a voice and cadence eerily similar to Link's dials in. He's got puppies for sale. This year, on Link's birthday, May 2nd, artist Scott Nurkin, whose murals of Nina Simone, John Coltrane, and other North Carolina music legends grace their respective hometowns, unveiled a wall-size painting of Link downtown, less than a mile from the historical marker that sits near a spot where the Rays once lived. Link's story is told inside the Dunn Area History Museum, displayed across from local Kohari Indian artifacts, unearthed by museum staffer and Kohari member Christy Harris. She worked with Link's daughter Beth, who now lives in Virginia, on the exhibit devoted to him, featuring early publicity pictures, a decorated twin-tone electric guitar, and his posthumous Hall of Fame certificate for Rumble. The albums on display include an autographed copy of his self-titled Link Ray from 1971, the album that served as my roadmap through Dunn. This is the record in which Link proudly proclaimed his Shawnee roots in a gatefold cover featuring a portrait of himself in profile, wearing a beaded necklace, his long hair in a headband. Link's looping cursive snakes around the contours of his cutout silhouette. "I love you very much, your dad, Link Ray," he wrote to Beth. The album, recorded on a farm that Vernon bought in Accokeek, Maryland, 300 miles from the Ray's hometown, would be the brothers' last full-length project together. The session took place in a former chicken coop with a rusted piano and broken windows. If Rumble stemmed from a desire to rebel against the world that his family came from, Link Ray summoned both a melancholic longing for a place and, in songs like Fire and Brimstone, a refusal to be pinned down by it. You could call it Link's Swamp Rock album, or his Country Funk album, or his Gospel Blues or Shawnee Roots album, or all of the above. Either way, the songs are in kinship with those of artists like The Meters, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Little Feet, and Dale Hawkins, and all of the other music that Link made and absorbed, ancient bald cypress-like in his lifetime. You could also call Link Wray his North Carolina album, though even though it was recorded in Maryland. In the mix, you're sure to hear the roof rattling, the walls shaking, the foot-stomping percussion. But the song that I want to go out on, the last notes for those stalwart roadside cypresses poking out of the water, is La Di Da. In this one, underneath Link's vocals and a steady rainfall percussion, a deep, loping bass conspires with wandering guitars, a feeling of night air and endless horizon that makes you just want to roll down the windows. Everybody singing La Di Da, the chorus goes, punctuated with whoops and shrieks of joy. It's a song of pure abandon and liberation, a song of deliverance. There's a picture here of the memorial beside the road. It has a picture of an image of a guitar at the top, and it says Link Wray, May 2nd, 1929 to November 5th, 2005. Born in Dunn and lived 200 yards west, inventor of the power chord, the modus operandi in rock and roll, honored annually by the citizens of Dunn with the Link Wray Music Festival the first weekend in May. And now, Walls of Fame, a muralist set out to honor North Carolina's musical heritage by painting portraits of notable artists, some famous rockers, and others musicians who inspired them in the towns and cities that they once called home. Written by Elizabeth Riddick. In 2006, Scott Nurkin completed a mural inside Pepper's Pizza on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Against a blue silhouette of North Carolina, he hung portraits that he'd painted of renowned musicians from across the state. Customers could flip to the back of the restaurant's menu to find a key listing the museums and their respective hometowns. The subject of the mural was appropriate for Pepper's, which Nurkin, a musician himself, called Ground Zero for cool before it closed in 2013. The portraits, now relocated to the University of North Carolina, laid the groundwork for Nurkin's North Carolina Musician Murals Project, which he developed to bring attention to the state's staggering number of famous musical artists. "It's striking to me that all these musicians are from our state," he says. "I want to make it my mission to educate people about this." In 2020, Nurkin kicked off the project in Hamlet, where he painted a 60-by-27-foot mural of jazz great John Coltrane in just a week. With a completed work as an example, Nurkin was able to get his foot in the door of other towns. To date, he's painted 17 musicians across North Carolina. The hyper-realistic paintings, most of which were done in a monochromatic color palette, are based on photographs by preeminent music photographers like Chuck Stewart and G. Knapps, with permission from them or their heirs. Almost all of the pieces appear in or near the musicians' hometowns, and there are more to come. With his project, Nurkin hopes to instill a sense of pride in North Carolina artists. So many of them aren't just good musicians. They are trailblazers in their field, he says. There's an unlimited supply of musicians in North Carolina. There's a long list of backup singers and people in the shadows who no one has heard of. Now, through Nurkin's work, those artists, too, may get a stage of their own. Now, if you want more information on Nurkin's murals, you can visit the web address themuralshop.com. Here's some more information about John Coltrane in Hamlet. Jazz saxophonist John Coltrane played in bands with Dizzy Gillespie, Earl Bostic, and Johnny Hodges before joining the Miles Davis Quintet in 1955. In 1960, Coltrane branched out as a leader, releasing the influential Giant Steps that year and forming the acclaimed quartet heard on My Favorite Things in 1961. By then, he'd become known for distinctive features in his playing, like his sheets of sound, a phrase used to describe his improvisational style. Guitarists like Duane Allman would later adapt the technique for rock. Nina Simone from Tryon. The prolific Nina Simone, known as the High Priestess of Soul, recorded more than 40 albums during her career, encompassing everything from jazz to show tunes to rock and roll. Born Eunice Kathleen Wayman in Tryon in 1933, Simone began playing piano at age 3 and later received a scholarship to attend the Juilliard School of Music. Her first hit came with a recording of Gershwin's I Loves You, Porgy, in 1959. A dedicated civil rights advocate, Simone addressed racial opposition in songs like I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. Thelonious Monk from Rocky Mount. Born in 1917, jazz pianist Thelonious Monk was famous for his improvisational style, collaborating with the likes of Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, and John Coltrane. Monk left behind an immense catalog of compositions, many of which, like Round Midnight and Ruby, My Dear, remain standards. Ronnie Millsap in Robbinsville. Discovering his musical prowess as a kid, Ronnie Millsap learned to play multiple instruments, including the piano, while at the Governor Moorhead School for the Blind in Raleigh. By the mid-1960s, Millsap was pursuing a career in music full-time, working across genres in country, R&B, and rock and roll. After relocating to Nashville and signing with RCA Records in 1973, he released two number one singles in 1974, Pure Love and Please Don't Tell Me How the Story Ends, the latter earning him the first of six Grammys. Betty Davis in Durham, born in 1944, the future Queen of Funk, moved to New York City as a young woman and released her debut single, Get Ready for Betty, in 1964. She wrote her own songs, produced most of her own albums, like the classic They Say I'm Different, in 1974, and was briefly married to Miles Davis. And finally, Dawn Gibson of Shelby. Best known as a songwriter, Dawn Gibson got his start with the Sons of Soil, which played on local radio in Shelby. He eventually moved to Knoxville and began writing his own songs. In 1957, he wrote two of his biggest hits, Oh Lonesome Me and I Can't Stop Loving You, on the same day. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.